The Black House. Written and performed for podcast by M.J. Hahn. Featuring Sally Clausen as Cindy Burnham. Our story concerns itself with something that could be considered truly terrifying. That being the housing market in San Francisco. Certainly something as treacherous and equally perilous as any jungle of the deepest and darkest variety. And although survival of the fittest may certainly be the order of the day, the laws of nature don't always necessarily apply. Like any large city, there are always those shadowy corners where one might find the unexpected. Where the public veneer is cracked and chipped away to reveal something raw and savage underneath. Where sometimes horrible things can happen and manage to go unnoticed, even in some places unassuming as the sleepy neighborhood known as the Outer Richmond. It had all started when Cindy Burnham had eavesdropped in on a conversation during one of her yoga classes. Cindy was a 33-year-old self-employed personal image branding consultant. That meant that she gave sage advice to the ever-increasing number of the hysterically unemployed, whose ranks seemed to be growing after the recent economic slump. For the most part, Cindy's kernels of wisdom amounted to little more than...
Visualize your success and it will happen.
Or...
You really need to be spending more money on your haircut and your shoes.
The sad thing was that Cindy's clients really took her seriously. Not so much because of what she said, but because of the way she said it. Let's just say that Cindy seemed to be able to make a living by sheer force of will alone. Not to say that that made things any easier for her. Cindy had set the bar so high that lately it seemed that she had to be constantly hustling for new clients in order to attain the style of living which she saw herself becoming accustomed to. Cindy had been like that since college, where she had met her husband-to-be, Chase Burnham, at that time a real fixer-upper in her eyes, who now, as a result of Cindy's constant coaching, had managed to make a name for himself locally as the eye on the street for Action 6 City News. Yes, Cindy's life was shaping up to be pretty much perfect, except for one minor issue. The Burnhams were still renting. It was their dark little secret, the thing that Cindy did her best to steer every dinner party conversation away from. Even though it didn't seem to bother Chase all that much, Cindy was very firm on the subject. No matter what it took, the Burnhams would be purchasing their dream house as soon as humanly possible. During her downtime, Cindy had taken to dropping in on the occasional midweek late morning yoga class, just to keep her eye out for any potential new clients that she might recruit. It had been during the sun salutation that Cindy's ears had pricked up when she heard the two tattooed hipster girls in front of her talking about a particular property out in the Richmond district.
23rd Avenue and California Street?
Cindy silently winced when she pinpointed just how deep in the Richmond that was. But aside from the location, the place sounded perfect. A two-unit, fully renovated, ultra-modern condo with parking? Even the price was unbelievable. Then Cindy overheard why. Too good to be true sounded just about right. Apparently the hitch was that the property came with an elderly tenant who was on a fixed income, a technicality coupled with the notoriously stringent renters' rights laws in San Francisco that would certainly present complications, to say the least. Cindy struck her warrior pose and quietly scoffed to herself, while she heard the hipster girls continue about how bad they would feel having to kick some poor senior citizen out onto the street just for some income unit that you could re-rent for a bucket of cash. Cindy raised an eyebrow and couldn't help thinking to herself,
"Get real, ladies. Even I moved to the Outer Richmond for a place with an income unit. That's pure gold in this town."
The idea of the house had burned in Cindy's mind for days, until at last she found herself driving slightly out of her way towards the Outer Richmond. She was heading up California Street, grunting with frustration as she was forced to stop every few blocks at a signal or a stop sign. Cindy looked askance at the rows of identical 1930s apartment houses on either side of her. She thought the area had a distinct working-class sort of blandness. Finally, Cindy made her way to the 20s, and when she neared 23rd Avenue, she let out a gasp of surprise. She pulled the car over and gaped. The house stood in stark modern contrast to the rest of the block, which paled by comparison in Cindy's eyes. The hipster girls hadn't exaggerated. The place dominated the street like a monumental showplace of gracious modern living. Cindy pulled into the short driveway while noting the large garage door with a smile. No more wasted hours circling the streets looking for a parking space. She got out of the car while shielding her eyes from the glare that reflected off of the two stories of floor-to-ceiling windows that towered over her. And then Cindy sighed. The majestic sight was oddly marred by what was trying to pass for drapes in the first-floor window. Someone had hung up a bunch of old blankets that looked moth-eaten and threadbare. Then Cindy remembered the tenant the hipster girls had mentioned. Cindy frowned, putting that particular challenge on her mental shortlist. Then she noticed that something was conspicuously absent. There was a distinct lack of signage to indicate that the place was even for sale. A short, covered entryway led to the front door. Cindy poked her head in. Standing like a giant mirror was a large sheet of glass that made up the front door. Cindy approached, cupping her hands over her eyes into a visor to try to have a peek. The subdued foyer was decked out in tasteful beige granite, including a large empty plinth that was screaming for an enormous floral arrangement. Cindy nodded with approval. From the little that she could see, the place seemed pretty amazing on the inside as well. And then a small piece of torn brown paper caught Cindy's eye. A handwritten note had been taped to the inside of the glass. "For sale" was spelled out in jittery handwriting, followed by a phone number.
Huh, not much of an advertising budget, I guess.
Cindy got out her phone and dialed. After a few rings, the call was answered by a strange voice that sounded sort of far away and distracted.
Yeah?
Yes. Hi. I was calling about the property on California Street.
California Street? What's the address, please?
Cindy looked around until she saw the numbers that had been etched into the glass.
That's 6114.
There was an awkward, momentary pause, and then the voice continued. The speaker's nonchalance really rubbed Cindy the wrong way.
Oh yeah, sure, you bet. Could you hold the line a moment, please?
Cindy couldn't help thinking that whoever this loser guy was, he could probably use her professional services. After that slight initial hiccup, however, the remaining details that led up to the Burnhams' eventual purchase of their dream house made it seem like the planets had aligned just for them. And a mere 30 days later, the deal was closed. The Burnhams were moving in. Finally, Cindy could say that she had it all. On the Burnhams' first official night in their new house, shortly after the movers had left, Cindy had already managed to pretty much set up the entire place. It's worth mentioning that set up to Cindy Burnham meant that every box had been emptied and cleared away, every room had been lovingly arranged and merchandised to perfection. While Chase was crashed out and snoring on the sofa, Cindy walked from room to room, basking in her excellent, well-appointed taste. When she arrived in the state-of-the-art kitchen, Cindy couldn't help running her hands over the granite countertops and stainless steel appliances with an almost lascivious pleasure. Then her reverie was interrupted suddenly. Cindy stood in her perfect kitchen with her head cocked to the side, listening intently. The faintest trace of music seemed to be rising through the floor from the flat below. The volume gently climbed, but the music wasn't loud or abrasive. More like the cheerful strains of a fairground calliope. Cindy glanced at the kitchen clock. It was just after midnight. She rolled her eyes at the effrontery and called out to Chase, causing him to snort awake and sit up. But by the time he came stumbling blearily over, the music had already stopped. Cindy arched an eyebrow while Chase murmured something unintelligible. He kissed her goodnight and shuffled off towards the bedroom. Cindy crossed the room to her perfectly arranged workstation. She began to flip through the stack of papers pertaining to the house. When Cindy arrived at the disclosure form the bank had provided, she scanned over it until she found the name.
Levy. Mr. Eugene Levy. Huh. First the god-awful blanket drapes, and now this. Well, that's strike two already, Mr. Levy. Guess we're going to have a little chat about noise after 10 o'clock.
A sudden screech startled Cindy, causing her to lower the paper. Outside the front window, at eye level, she could see two crows poised on the telephone wires across the street. They hopped from wire to wire while their angry cawing persisted. Their black marble eyes flashed in the dull glow of the streetlights. The notion crossed Cindy's mind that the bird's piercing racket was somehow directed at her. She set down the bank form and moved closer to the window. With a squawk, the blackbird scattered and disappeared into the night. A sudden warm draft blew through the room, sending an odd shiver down Cindy's spine. The file of papers, including the bank form, were sent scattering to the floor.
Okay.
Cindy collected herself. With a deep breath, she crossed the room and gathered up her paperwork. After straightening her workspace, she padded from room to room, turning out the lights. She arrived in the bedroom to find Chase splayed out in the middle of the bed, snoring away. Cindy moved to the bathroom, where she ran through her usual before-bed routine. When Cindy had finished, she shut off the remaining lights and made a beeline for the king-size bed, where she discovered that the new pristine bed linens were as cold as ice. Chase stirred and rolled over, wrapping his arms around her. He squeezed her and began rubbing his hands along her back. Cindy seized the opportunity.
Honey, I think I'm going to call Karen tomorrow about Levy.
Ugh, Karen Wolf. Why would you want to call her?
Because she's good at what she does.
Aw, hon, just leave it alone. We got a good deal on this place. We can afford to be a little charitable.
But if we get Levy out, we could rent the downstairs unit for 10 times what we're getting now.
Chase remained silent, finally answering Cindy with a sudden barrage of snoring. Cindy rolled over and clutched her pillow. She grumbled and reached into her nightstand drawer, fetching out her trusty earplugs. But before she wedged them into her ears, she became aware of the distinct sound of music rising up through the floor again. Cindy glanced at the clock and rolled her eyes.
1 a.m.? Come on. That's strike three, Mr. Levy.
Yes, she'd definitely be calling Karen Wolf in the morning. And while Cindy Burnham struggled to fall asleep, she realized that the earplugs did no good. While they did manage to shut out her husband's snoring well enough, she could still hear the same oddly cheerful strains of the fairground calliope that continued to rise up from below. The next morning, Cindy woke up alone in bed with a pounding headache. She had finally managed to fall asleep sometime after 4 due to Levy's continuous keyboard playing. Cindy removed her earplugs and rolled over in the enormous bed. Chase had left a note stating that he would be out all day shooting interviews on location and wouldn't be back until late that night. Cindy sat up while her head continued to throb. Despite the pain, she was able to appreciate her first morning in her perfect bedroom. The late morning sun was gently drifting down the tasteful off-white walls, and what's more, you could hear a pin drop. The house was so quiet.
What? No morning serenades, Mr. Levy?
Cindy crawled out of bed and staggered into the bathroom. Luckily, she hadn't booked any clients until later that afternoon. She ran a hot shower and stood in it until, at last, her head began to clear. Next, it was on to the kitchen to brew up the vat of coffee necessary for tackling the myriad of emails that she knew had accumulated overnight. Cindy sat sipping her coffee at her workstation, just having a little moment before she opened her laptop. Her view out of the front window revealed a completely crow-free, brilliant blue sky. The sunlight streamed in, warming the hardwood floors beneath her feet. The air became rich with the delicate fragrance from the imported Lebanese cedar. It was completely perfect. Then Cindy's eyes fell over the pile of paperwork pertaining to the house that remained where she had left it the night before. The disclosure form from the bank still sat on the top of the pile. Levy's name seemed to burn off of the page. Cindy fired up the old laptop and began to compose a new message to her good friend Karen Wolf, who certainly had to be in the running for the most ruthless property lawyer award in the city. Then Cindy paused mid-sentence, thinking that perhaps the situation merited more immediate attention. She fished out her phone and scrolled through her numbers until she found Wolf and Associates. Luckily, Karen was in the office, and after a brief exchange of pleasantries, they got down to business. Their conversation was brief and succinct. Karen was all too happy to assist with a little legal intimidation to try to scare off Cindy's tenant. She suggested that they meet up for lunch, so Cindy could sign the necessary forms to get the proverbial ball rolling. One power lunch later left Cindy thoroughly schooled on how they would be proceeding. Karen Wolf had instructed her to refrain from any personal contact with the tenant. Any communication must be filtered through legal channels. Karen assured Cindy that she would have an assistant on Levy's door to serve the necessary papers before the end of the day. And so it progressed. Cindy spent the remainder of her day seeing her own clients, and her consulting had shined accordingly, what with the weight of the whole Levy issue now off of her shoulders. She decided that a sumptuous meal at Chase's favorite French restaurant, Fleur de Lis, would be just the thing not only to celebrate, but also perhaps buffer the impending conversation that she'd be having with her husband to fill him in on what she was up to. She booked their favorite corner table, just to be sure. As promised, Karen Wolf's assistant, Mr. Lamb, had shown up at 6114 California Street just before 5 o'clock that evening. Ms. Wolf had already informed Mr. Lamb that the Burnhams wouldn't be at home. All he had to do was deliver the envelope to the Burnhams' tenant and get a signature for receipt of delivery. Ms. Wolf had been very specific on that point. Feeling a little shaky, Mr. Lamb gathered his resources and approached the front door. After double-checking the address on the envelope, Lamb pressed the appropriate button on the ultramodern call box. A strange, distorted metallic static poured from the call box speaker. Lamb struggled to listen, thinking that he was able to discern a voice hidden somewhere in the din.
Hello? Hello, Mr. Levy? My name is Mr. Lamb. I've got some papers to deliver to you.
The static ceased immediately. There was a buzzing noise, and the large sheet of glass that made up the front door clicked and opened slightly. Mr. Lamb swallowed, steeled himself, and entered. He climbed up the short flight of stairs, which delivered him to the first floor. At the end of the corridor, he saw that the door to the tenant's flat was ajar.
Maybe this is going to be easy after all.
Mr. Lamb began a brisk walk down the corridor, until he noticed a strange warm draft emanating from the darkened room beyond the door. He slowed and pressed the door inward with a cautious hand.
Mr. Levy? Hello? Mr. Levy?
The room was completely dark, but more than that, a strange, oppressive gloom seemed to hang about the place, accented by the faintest trace of sulfur in the air. Mr. Lamb fumbled with his cell phone. He tried to use its tiny light like a torch, but the pervasive blackness in the room seemed to consume what feeble light the cell phone afforded. Even the light from the corridor was swallowed up just beyond the open doorway.
Mr. Levy?
Hesitantly, Mr. Lamb called out again while taking a few timid steps inside. He reached a tentative hand in front of him and flinched, recoiling from the burning heat that stung his fingertips. The very air in the room seemed to smolder. Mr. Lamb's skin began to prickle when he thought he could sense something quietly creeping towards him from somewhere out in the darkness. In a sudden burst of panic, Mr. Lamb attempted a hasty retreat, only to find that his feet were firmly fixed to the floor. He could only manage to turn his head just enough to see the door to the flat slowly closing. The light from the outside corridor, gradually diminishing to a mere sliver, before the door finally closed, plunging Mr. Lamb into complete darkness with an ominous click. Later that evening, the Burnhams arrived home from dinner. Chase was still feeling a little surly from Cindy's news about retaining Karen Wolfe's services. The evening had ended up being one of those three bottles of wine affairs before Cindy had gotten Chase to calm down and try to see things her way. Needless to say, they were a little tipsy when they pulled into the garage. They failed to notice the strange dark black-red stain that was beginning to bleed through the garage's ceiling. Cindy followed Chase's clumsy footsteps through the garage's side door into the foyer, where she started her climb up the stairs behind him. When Cindy arrived at the first floor landing, she looked down the corridor towards Levy's apartment while listening intently. Everything seemed normal and mercifully quiet. Cindy smiled, a little self-satisfied.
Good. Guess Levy got the message all right.
On her way up the remaining flight of stairs to their flat, Cindy noticed that her phone was blinking with a new message from Karen Wolfe.
Hi, Cindy. I just wanted to let you know I sent my assistant over to drop off the papers, but I haven't heard back from him yet. I don't know what's up with him. I guess I'll call you tomorrow when I know more. All right, have a good night, hon. Bye-bye.
Cindy's brow furrowed while she closed the door to the flat behind her. The tiniest fraction of doubt had begun to nag at her. Cindy blew out her cheeks with a sigh and reassured herself that Karen was on top of things. If anybody could handle unexpected contingencies, it was Karen. Cindy moved over to the sofa and flopped down while she kicked off her heels. Chase had already disappeared into the bedroom. She could hear the shower running. Cindy stretched back. Her head was spinning a little from the wine. She yawned, realizing just how tired she was. What she really needed was a good night's sleep, without any musical accompaniment from Mr. Levy. Then, as if on cue, as if he'd read her thoughts, it started again. The odd strains of the circus calliope began to rise up from below. Cindy clamped her hands over her face and screamed into her palms. She sunk into the sofa cushions, burying her face while trying to muffle out the cheery melody. Cindy lay there gasping with frustration, the beginnings of a raging headache forming just behind her eyes.
What the hell? I don't believe this.
Cindy was ready to charge downstairs and bang on Levy's door until he stopped the god-awful racket. Then, with a sigh of resignation, Cindy tried to calm herself, remembering Karen's advice about no contact except through legal channels. Cindy grumbled while she mentally hammered the final nail into Levy's coffin. The next morning, Chase woke up early as usual in preparation for his busy day at the studio. After he had showered and shaved, he noticed that Cindy was still asleep on the sofa. Shaking his head, he let himself out and headed downstairs to the garage, where a disturbing sight was waiting there to greet him. Choking on the sulfurous fumes, Chase covered his nose and mouth. His eyes popped at the sight of his prized BMW, covered in a sort of charred reddish sludge that seemed to be dripping from the garage ceiling and trashing his baby's paint job.
What the? Ugh! Like I have time to deal with this.
Chase looked down at his watch and groaned, realizing that he wouldn't have enough time to make it to the car wash and Starbucks before he had to be at the studio. He gingerly opened the car door and got inside, doing his best to keep the strange muck off of his Italian silk suit. Chase backed out of the driveway with his phone already at his ear. His tone was slightly irritated in the message that he left for Cindy, requesting that she do something about the mess in the garage. Like the previous day, Cindy woke with her head pounding. She had spent a fitful night, unsure if she had ever managed to even fall asleep. It didn't matter anymore if Levy was playing his organ or not. The various cheerful melodies seemed to be going around and around in Cindy's head all the time now. Another night of lousy rest left Cindy feeling dazed and muddled. Her body ached as she struggled to her feet and checked the time. It was already 10:00. Chase had long gone, And this time, he hadn't left her a note.
Oh, he must still be pissed off about the legal proceedings.
Then Cindy remembered Karen was supposed to call today. Cindy looked around until she found her phone. A shock of excitement bolted through her when she saw the little red light blinking. And then Cindy deflated when she noted that the voicemail was only from Chase. She listened to his message with an odd expression on her face.
Clean up the mess in the garage.
Cindy couldn't imagine what he was talking about. She decided that she'd better check it out first before beginning her day. She threw on her sweats and her flip-flops and headed downstairs. Cindy couldn't shake her muddled feeling. It felt like her head was stuffed with cotton balls, on top of the pounding headache, which seemed to be becoming a regular thing now. Cindy's steps were suddenly halted. She let out a shock at the sight of the 500-pound lion seated on the first-floor landing. Its massive bulk blocked the entire corridor that led to Levy's apartment. The lion's golden eyes met Cindy's shocked expression. And then, as if zeroing in on her fear, with a terrible roar, it charged up the stairs towards her. Cindy fell back against the stairs, raising her arms to shield herself. In the process, Cindy's feet flew out from under her, resulting in a rather unladylike descent, sending her bouncing down from stair to stair until she finally came to rest on the landing. She peeked out from behind her hands to find that she was alone.
Ugh, get it together, Cindy. A lion on the stairs? Come on.
She climbed to her feet and wiped her forehead. The first floor corridor was like an oven. Cindy shook her head and continued down to the garage.
Oh my God! What the hell is this?
The sight had certainly unsettled her. A large puddle of stinking dark sludge had collected on the floor of the garage where Chase's Beamer had been parked. Little driblets of the fuming dark red ooze were dropping down with an unpleasant plopping sound. Cindy's eyes followed the repellent trickle up to the ceiling, where she saw the large circular stain that had spread to nearly 6 feet across. It looked almost like a scorch mark.
Ugh! Disgusting!
Cindy cautiously sidestepped the oozing mess and opened the garage door. She retrieved the garden hose from the utility cabinet, and with a shaken expression, she began to wash away the sickening muck down the driveway into the gutter. After Cindy had done her best with getting rid of the mess, she returned upstairs, relieved that this time the stairwell seemed to be free of any bizarre wildlife. When Cindy got back to the flat, her cell phone was blinking again. Clients were calling, yet Cindy found herself unable to generate the enthusiasm necessary to deal with their calls. She merely sat upright on the sofa, trying to quietly digest what was happening to her. After sitting a few hours in a sort of paralyzed silence, Cindy realized that she still hadn't heard from Karen. She grumbled with frustration while she dialed the number for Wolf and Associates. The call went straight to voicemail. Cindy slammed the phone down and decided that some fresh air was in order. She got herself together and dragged herself outside for a walk, hopefully to clear her head. After only a few blocks, Cindy discovered that all that fresh air only seemed to make her head feel worse. She stopped in her tracks and turned, remembering the corner store at the end of her block.
Chardonnay. That's the answer.
Cindy picked up the pace as she headed back towards home, praying that the little store on the corner would have a decent wine selection. When Cindy found her way back to 23rd Avenue, she entered the little store on the corner. The old man behind the counter smiled at her, flashing a selection of shiny gold teeth. Cindy walked like a zombie to the far end of the store and inspected the wine selection and the refrigerated cases that lined the back wall. Happy to have found something that didn't involve a screw-on cap, Cindy returned to the counter with her selection. The old man rolled his stool over to the cash register.
You're new in the neighborhood, aren't you? Haven't seen you in here before.
Oh, hello. Yes, my husband and I just moved in a few doors down.
The man's eyes widened. He wagged a few stubby fingers in the direction of the Burnham's house.
You moved in down there? What, they sold it again already? I don't believe it.
Cindy appeared perplexed, and the old man continued.
What, those jokers that built the fancy condo didn't tell you what was there before? I don't believe it.
The old man looked over the counter at Cindy with a wry smile.
Honey, you never heard of the Black House?
Cindy walked out of the tiny store with her bottle of wine and her ears buzzing. She felt slightly numb. The old man had given her an earful, all right, and his words were still whirling around in Cindy's brain. Anton LaVey, a name she had never heard before. Apparently, he had been a colorful fixture in the neighborhood up until his death in 97. A former lion tamer, as well as a talented organist from the twilight world of mid-century fairgrounds and burlesque houses. A curious character, who also happened to have been none other than the High Priest of the Church of Satan. Not only that, but apparently the Black House, LaVey's former residence and satanic temple, had previously occupied the very spot where the Burnhams' luxury modern condo now stood.
Not Levy. LaVey.
Cindy tried to walk down the block, struggling to put one foot in front of the other. Her pulse was throbbing in her ears. She wedged the bottle of wine under her arm and rubbed her forehead. Suddenly, she felt a little lightheaded. Her vision seemed to blur. The air shimmered in a sort of heat haze. Cindy blinked several times, and then, when she looked down the street, it was as if she was seeing it for the first time. The apartment houses that crammed the block remained the same, only now the spot where her house had stood seemed to be different. As Cindy got closer, more details came into focus. Set back off the street, lurking behind a chain-link fence and an overgrown garden, was a small black Victorian house. The paint was cracked and peeling. Improvised curtains made of dingy blankets hung in the dirty windows. The dark little house seemed to be at odds with the larger apartment houses that stood on either side of it, rather giving it the effect of a rotten tooth and an otherwise pleasant smile.
The Black House.
As soon as Cindy said it, the very air seemed to electrify, while in the distance, in the swirling heat haze, a pair of crows appeared overhead and began a barrage of irate squawking, while the little house radiated a clear and distinct malevolence. Cindy clutched at her wine bottle and closed her eyes, telling herself to get a grip. She relaxed her breathing and counted to 10, and reassured herself that she was in control. After a few moments, when Cindy opened her eyes, she was relieved to see that things seemed to have returned to normal. Normal, except that she was still standing in front of her house, wearing a vacant expression. Cindy realized that she looked exactly like the sort of person she usually made fun of.
The burnt-out whack job, just staring off into space. Great.
Cindy had spent the remainder of her day staring blankly at the TV while washing down handfuls of ibuprofen with cheap Chardonnay. When the bottle was eventually drained, Cindy took some solace in the oblivion it afforded. She collapsed into the sofa cushions, blissfully ignorant of the strains of the calliope that continued to rise up through the floor. Cindy woke up later in the dark. Still sprawled out on the sofa, she swung her feet out onto the floor, which sent the empty Chardonnay bottle spinning off into the distance. Cindy checked the clock.
3 a.m.?
She groaned. Her head felt worse than ever, now coupled with the taste of stale wine in her mouth. And then Cindy heaved a heavy sigh, noting that Levy was in the throes of his usual serenade.
Ugh! Enough already!
Cindy staggered to her feet and tried to steady herself. She bolted downstairs until she found herself pounding on Levy's door.
Come on! Open up! I know you're in there!
There was no answer. Cindy stood there with her chest heaving. She was about to start pounding on the door again, then stopped at the ominous clicking sound of the door unlocking. Then, slowly, almost deliberately, the door swung open. A gust of warm air and the slightest trace of sulfur drifted out into the corridor. Levy's flat was silent.
Hello? Is anybody here?
Cindy's fingers crept along the wall. She sighed with relief when she felt the light switch. She flicked it, and a single work light that lay toppled on the floor came to life. The beam of light shot up the wall at a dramatic angle and intensified, growing brighter until at last it was suddenly quenched with the sound of the glass bulb shattering. Cindy gasped. The momentary shaft of light had been enough to discern the contents of the room, or rather, the lack of contents. It had burned in Cindy's mind like a photograph. The entire flat had been empty, but not just empty. It had been completely unfinished. Bare concrete floors and drywall, scattered abandoned tools littered the floor. It looked like the workers had just dropped their tools and left. And then, from the gloom, Cindy heard a noise.
Hello?
A strange chorus of chanting voices seemed to rise from the darkness around her. And then a solitary, spectral figure seemed to emerge from the blackness. A hot, blistering wind rose out of nowhere. Cindy fell to her knees, only able to cower, slack-jawed in a trembling heap. The shadowy figure wore a black cloak and a hood with tiny horns. His imposing silhouette was abruptly cast into sharp relief from the blazing red pentagram that suddenly burst into life behind him. The chorus of voices climbed as Cindy's powerless gaze was drawn to the eyes which burned like embers from beneath the horned hood. The tiniest quavering sputter escaped from Cindy's lips.
Levy?
The pentagram erupted into a mass of swirling hellfire. It filled the entire room, licking painfully at Cindy's skin, then engulfing her completely. A booming voice bellowed from the hooded figure in the center of the inferno. Cindy's final scream was seared away completely and silenced. The wieldy blaze was suddenly quenched. The empty room pitched once more into darkness. Chase Burnham woke the next morning, surprised to see that Cindy had gotten up already, considering the state she had been in the previous night. He had come home from the studio as usual, only to find his lovely wife passed out on the sofa again, hugging a Chardonnay bottle and refusing to budge. Now Chase briskly ran through his usual morning routine before his departure for work. He'd started to leave Cindy a voicemail while he descended the stairs to the garage. His message was interrupted by the sight he found there, causing him to suddenly drop his phone. Chase was unable to suppress a choking gasp of shock. His precious BMW was covered in another stinking film of the same strange sulfurous ooze that still seemed to be seeping from the garage ceiling.
Ugh, again? I don't believe this. What does she do all day?
While grumbling at the inconvenience about another surprise trip to the car wash, Chase backed his filthy BMW out of the driveway. He couldn't help noticing the two tattooed hipster girls standing by the curb. They gave him a flirty wink and waved playfully as he drove by. Chase went to check the girls out in his rearview mirror and then frowned. The girls had disappeared. Only a pair of squawking black crows could be seen flying up and coming to rest on the telephone wires above the street. Their cawing persisted until the BMW disappeared out of sight. Months had passed since Cindy Burnham's disappearance. Karen Wolfe and her new assistant had proved to be invaluable with helping Chase relocate to a more geographically desirable location south of Market. A new bachelor loft that was only minutes from the studio. Karen assured Chase that he wouldn't have to worry about the house on California Street ever again. The place had practically resold itself. They'd even managed to unload it at a profit. Another young couple had already moved in, eager to start some new renovations. Their plan was to remodel the entire place into a single-family house. It would just be a matter of getting rid of that troublesome tenant that was living on the first floor. This is MJ Hahn. I hope you've enjoyed this special edition of the Belfair podcast, and I'd like to extend extra thanks to Sally Clausen, who played the part of Cindy Burnham. Music on the program was provided by freesound.com. Organ selections were performed by Anton LaVey from the Satan Takes a Holiday recordings. Hey, did you know that there's a sequel to Yuki O'Malley and the Belfair? That's right, it's called Crowley Golden and the Isis Heart, and is playing right now at isisheartpodcast.com. Be sure to check it out and hear about everything that's befallen our friends in the city since last summer. And, well, I guess here we are at the end again. So, until next time, goodbye for now, and thanks for listening.